Ben and Bell, Colin McHugh, Babip, Babip, swinging strikes, great X Fips, spin rate, sales, great Sam Dyson in a vacuum.
I've been very excited for this podcast. Time to start our position previews. Yeah, all right.
I like the enthusiasm.
I'm very excited. It's starting to feel real. Starting to feel like we're getting into fantasy baseball catchers today.
Yeah, Chris and I are drafting a league for keeps, for counties.
Today?
The second one already of this year that we're playing out.
So it is feeling real, because real things are happening.
And it's only going to take us 6 hours.
Auction?
Auction, yes.
Yeah. NL only. Ooh. Auction.
If we're being literal, it'll take us 4.5 hours. Anybody who's done an auction, a baseball auction before, has been there.
Two catchers?
Yes.
Oh, NL only, two catchers. How many teams?
5 outfielders.
Yeah.
10 teams?
12 teams.
12 teams.
12 teams. 24 catchers to start. At the
you're
going to
start
league.
3 to 4 players that don't start for their own team.
Well, look, today.
Just not if you're careful with your money.
Today is catcher day.
There are 60 outfielders that will be started. There are not 60 everyday outfielders.
Not all 12 teams will have. But, like, some teams will have enough starters.
Okay, catchers, guys. It's our catcher preview today, so we're going to talk about this position, the lightest hitting of all the hitting positions, but still very important. And, yeah, I am starting to wonder if this is going to be the year where my catcher strategy finally changes and I don't just sit there and wait and take some lousy catcher and hope it's, you know, the number 6, Russell Martin, whatever. Let's be number 6, number 7, whatever. Maybe it's time to invest a little bit more in one of those studs. I will get your opinion on that. We will go through average draft position, which is very early. We will touch on the latest news, including Alex Reyes needing Tommy John surgery and Chris Tillman unlikely to be ready for the season opener. And Kyle Schwarber may do some catching. So that is very, very relevant. All right. So the first thing I wanted to do was think back to something that Scott actually said, on a podcast last year. We were looking at the best teams in our podcast points league. And Scott noticed that a lot of the best teams had elite catchers. So I just went back and I looked at all of my CBS leagues from last year. And Podcast Points League, the JT Realmuto owner won the league, beat Al's team, and Al had Jonathan Lucroy. And those were the two highest scoring teams in the league. One had Lucroy, one had Realmuto. My editorial league, which I think Keith and Chris were in, the winner had Gary Sanchez, drafted Kyle Schwarber, but had Gary Sanchez. The podcast categories league, Yas Queen dominated it. She had Matt Wieters. She beat, I think, Dylan in the finals. He had Wilson Ramos. The Memorial Magazine League was a roto league that we were in. Scott won it. He had Wilson Ramos and Gary Sanchez. I had Russell Martin and Salvador Perez, and I came in second. And in the real roto league, another two-catcher league, George Maselli won with Tom Murphy and Tommy Joseph. So, it doesn't seem like there was a, you must have an elite catcher, but look at the winners and look at the teams who did well, and I think a lot of them last year had one, you know, Sanchez or Posey, or maybe less Posey because he was drafted higher, but Sanchez and Lucroy, I don't know. Did you guys see
Wilson
the same
Ramos
thing?
Wilson Ramos was
well,
a
yeah,
big
it's
one, too.
Huge, Wilson yep. Ramos. Did you feel that way last year, that the teams with the great catchers had great seasons?
No.
No,
not the teams that drafted great catchers. No.
Well, I mean, Posey and Lucroy were 1 and 2 last year, going into last year, right?
I feel Lucroy was probably well below Posey. Like there was a much bigger gap there than this
than year. There is this year. But I think he was officially number 2.
So you're saying that Posey was the only great catcher last year?
Going into the draft, I think he probably was. Well, Schwarber probably was as well.
Yeah, Schwarber went high,
and I think last year in particular, and I think my view of it this year is that the investment in that early round catcher didn't really pay off. You talked about a lot of guys.
There was only one early round. There were two. There was Lucroy and Schwarber.
Right. And you talked about those, you know, the teams that did really well, and they had guys like, you know, Jonathan Lucroy, Gary Sanchez, Wilson Ramos, all these guys who were great catchers. But they weren't necessarily drafted that way.
Sure.
Yeah. I think for most of the season, it was a clear top three of Posey, Lucroy, and Gattis. And Posey was early rounder. Lucroy was a mid rounder, but still a highly regarded catcher.
But no catcher this year is going to be drafted as high as Posey was last year.
No. In part because now there are more who are considered high end. Posey isn't as much of a standout as he used to be. I think there's more truth to this in points leagues because lineups are so small. You have to take advantage of where you can get an advantage, I guess is a good way to put it. And that doesn't necessarily mean I'm willing to spend for catchers because they do suffer from some attrition at the position. It isn't always predictable, apart from Posey, who's obviously been rock solid at the top. It isn't always predictable who is going to stand out at the position or if anybody even is. A lot of injuries there. So I tend not to spend on it. I think this year, because that elite tier is deeper than usual with three actual names in it, and you can get a potentially standout catcher in like round six, I do kind of like the idea. I haven't actually done it yet in a mock.
Of what? What's, you like what?
Of drafting one of the three elites in round six.
Yeah, so you're talking about getting, you're not going to get Posey there, but you're talking about getting Sanchez or Lucroy in round six.
Correct.
How about Chris? How about Heath? What are you thinking right now on February 15th about how you're going to draft catchers? Now, catchers a little bit complex. We're going to talk about the difference between one catcher leagues and two catcher leagues. We're going to talk about the difference between drafts and auctions, and we're going to talk about who you'd rather have, like, who you'd take first in a dynasty league. But, let's just talk about your general redraft league. And here on February 15th, happy belated Valentine's Day, by the way, how's your catcher strategy looking right now?
I'm probably not going to draft Posey just because LaCroix is going a round or two later. If LaCroix, Scott said sixth, I feel pretty great about Jonathan LaCroix in the fifth round. I feel fine with Sanchez in the sixth or seventh. I don't like just punting catcher till the very end, but if I do, then I'll just take Cameron Rupp.
Okay.
I'm usually the guy who wants to take a catcher early. I think it's a lot like tight end in football, where if you can get someone who's really elite, it puts you so far ahead of the curve. But this year, I look at the top three guys and I think they're big question marks with all three of them. Gary Sanchez, obviously the limited track record. We saw what the upside can be, but he's only done it once. It was a big outlier from the way he played in the minors. And Posey and LaCroix, 30 is a really rough age for catchers. I looked it up. Since 1965, there have only been two catchers with multiple five-win seasons after the age of 30. Now, I know wins, Baseball Reference WAR isn't a perfect
gauge of fantasy
translation for fantasy value, but I think it serves the point well enough that it's very rare for catchers to put up multiple elite seasons after the age of 30. But there will be exceptions.
I guess I wonder, like, how is that? You say there's a lot of question marks at the top. How is that more so this year than past years? Because, like,
well,
other than Posey, who did you feel was a standout at catcher?
Not last year, but
in recent history.
In recent years, you had Posey and LaCroix in the physical primes of their careers. You had last year Kyle Schwarber, who was
a lot of question marks too.
Had some question marks, but also wasn't expected to play catcher, and we thought it would help him stay healthy. which so much for that. But I also just look at LaCroix had a really bad season 2 years ago. Posey.
Yeah, LaCroix, LaCroix is not getting enough credit, I think, because he has had three of his last four seasons. Jonathan LaCroix has been either the number one or the number two catcher in fantasy. He had that one bad year. But
you don't have LaCroix ranked lower than we do in your rankings. So you're happy with taking him in the fifth or sixth, too.
I think that's a fine place to take him. I won't be the one who takes him more often than not. I've yet to do that.
Okay. And there are some exciting guys maybe a little bit later. Wilson Contreras, you could get a little bit later. I don't know how many exciting guys there are. Yasmani Grandal.
Yasmani Grandal. I like Contreras a lot. I think if he continues being drafted in the ninth or tenth round, then
I think Contreras is being underdrafted.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's where I depart from you guys on this, because if I can't have one of the elite three, particularly if we're talking a one catcher league, two catcher leagues change the equation a bit, but one catcher league, if I can't get one of the three elites, I don't really think I'm going to spend at catcher. Like, I'll take Jonathan Vogt late. I may not even have to, if it's 12-team league, I may not even have to go that far. Maybe Yadier Molina.
Who? Jonathan
Steven
Vogt.
Vogt?
Jonathan
John
Vogt, huh?
Steven
John
Vogt.
Voigt?
John Voigt.
You should not draft John Voigt.
There was a period where Evan Gattis, I thought, was kind of the fourth wheel, and I would take him a little bit after those others. But then the Astros signed Brian McCann, and we don't know how Gattis' playing time is going to shake out.
Yeah, and they signed Carlos Beltran to play DH,
yep,
too. So Gattis could definitely take a hit, but I mean, the guy's got obvious power, and Gattis last year, let's see, he was the number 5 catcher in points, number 4 in roto, and he did miss some time. He got off to a terrible start. Did he get demoted at one point? Yeah, he got sent down. We'll dive into the position a little bit more. Some important stats for you to know. Well, one important stat, at bats, plate appearances, they really matter at this position. You look at a guy like Yadier Molina, for example, and Molina, he was the number 4 catcher in points leagues, number 7 in roto with 8 home runs. But Buster Posey had more plate appearances. So you look at points leagues, for example, each of the top 12 catchers in points leagues finished in the top 13 in plate appearances. Derek Norris was 11th in plate appearances and, was 18th at catcher. So he's the exception, but top 12 catchers usually are top 12 or close to it in plate appearances. And it was very similar in roto. Steven Vogt, though, was not a top 12 catcher in roto. He was in points and he was top 12 in plate appearances. That's an important stat. Here are some not so important stats that are just fun that you could tell at the water cooler. Evan Gattis hit 11 triples in 2015. 11 of his 12 career triples came in 2015. Evan Gattis hitting 11 triples in a season, I know that was 2015. Still one of the weirdest stats I've ever seen in fantasy. And I have no explanation for it. Here's another one. Tom Murphy, Rockies catcher, who will get some love in two catcher leagues for sure. He is 2-for-35 with a double on the road in his career away from Coors Field. He has a 261 OPS. Probably means nothing, but I imagine he'll be better at home than on the road. And, your least important stat, Wilson Contreras spells his first name with 2 L's, and Wellington Castillo spells his first name with 1 L, and I just think that those two should, you know, have a chat and switch things up.
Wellington Castillo always throws me off.
Yeah, you know the story behind that, right?
I do not.
They were playing a pickup basketball game at spring training a few years ago, and Castillo beat him and said, "Take this L."
Okay. Well, that makes a lot more sense. Thank you.
It's true.
Also, if you want to compare catchers to the rest of the league, in 2000, let's look at the last 3 years. 2014, you know, it's always been Lucroy and Posey or Posey and Gattis, but 2014, Lucroy and Posey were the best. Lucroy was the number 32 hitter in points leagues overall, number 67 in roto. Why the big difference? He had 53 doubles, so it helped him in points. So again, Lucroy 32nd best hitter as the number 1 catcher in points, 67th in roto. Posey was number 40 in points, number 37 in roto. I'll just sum it up like this. If you get a great year from a catcher, it looks like based on the last 3 years, he'll probably end up as around the 35th best hitter in fantasy. So that is why catchers aren't that important, but it's also about their relative value to the rest of the position. So let's do this real quick, guys. Here's what we're going to do as far as news and notes go when we do these position previews. Since position previews are the ones that people seem to go back in time and listen to at a later date, depending on when they start tuning into this podcast, we won't spend much time on the news and notes. We'll save this for a day when we're not doing a position preview. But big news, obviously, Alex Reyes, partially torn UCL. After these news and notes, we'll get right back into catchers. Cardinals pitcher Scott jinxed him yesterday, talking about how underranked he was. And now he's going to need Tommy John surgery, and he's out for the year. So, talk to me about Alex Reyes, the Cardinals pitching staff, what happens now, and then let's talk dynasty a little bit here too, guys. Go ahead.
Well, Alex Reyes is going to have Tommy John surgery, and obviously that stinks because he was the consensus top pitching prospect in baseball, 101 mile per hour fastball, just electric arsenal, and looked great last year. So that's unfortunate. For single season leagues, it does provide a little bit of clarity because now, I was just talking about it on yesterday's show. Now there's not that need to try and squeeze him into a rotation with 5 people already in it. So Mike Leake Lance Lynn and Michael Wacha, provided those they all stay healthy, their jobs appear to be secure. And if they don't stay healthy, which is an issue with Waka's shoulder, Lynn coming back from Tommy John surgery, if they don't, there's still Luke Weaver waiting in the wings, who also got a chance late last year and had, I think, 3 of his 8 starts just looked brilliant. I actually think he's kind of underrated as a prospect because he was overshadowed by Alex Reyes. So he's up there in the hopefuls like Jose De Leon and Lucas Giolito. He's up there with those in my rankings now. For Dynasty League purposes, Chris and I were kind of talking about
fighting.
This. Fighting might be a little strong, but yeah, we were arguing about it yesterday, just how much long-term value Alex Reyes loses because of this surgery. And he loses some. I think I determined to drop him from 4th to 7th in my top 100 prospects because it's still, like, I still don't think there is a pitching prospect in baseball who has shown he has the kind of upside Alex Reyes does. And even though you're talking a year and a half to 2 year absence for him, I mean, most of the most talented pitching prospects are that far away from reaching the majors anyway. So I still see him as an elite, long-term chip and maybe somebody to buy low on right now in dynasty league formats while his owner's looking for a lifeline.
Okay. And I just think it causes a huge hit to his long-term dynasty value because it throws, you know, you already have the fact that any pitcher, even the best pitching prospect in baseball, is inherently unreliable as a prospect. Now you throw in a year at least of recovery. He's probably going to be ready for the start of the 2018 season, you would imagine, but probably going to be on an innings limit there. So you're probably looking 2019, the first year he's really able to help you out in fantasy, assuming that he's able to return to full strength, as we've seen with Dylan Bundy. Is actually a great example of someone who was basically at the same point in his development process.
Well, a bit earlier. He was in the low minors.
But he had made his major league debut.
He was a little younger. He was the top pitching prospect in baseball.
He probably would have been in the rotation the next year. And it took him 3 full seasons to make it to the majors. And it was basically he wouldn't have been in the majors if they hadn't needed to put him in the majors.
Okay. So Heath and I will try to dive into this a little bit more if we have to. That was pretty good stuff there on Friday. Let's talk about the Orioles rotation. Chris Tillman, unlikely to be ready for the start of the season after having a PRP injection in his shoulder. He might miss just a little bit of time. So I don't know that this changes that much. Kyle Schwarber will do some catching in 2017. And, yeah, okay, as we do this catcher preview, what's your approach to Kyle Schwarber right now?
He's not a catcher.
But he
that's how I'm
and he's exceedingly unlikely to be a catcher.
You don't think within 2 months?
How often do third-string catchers who aren't good defensively get into games?
You don't think within 2 months he's got 5 games at catcher?
Why would he? Miguel Montero's like a starting caliber catcher too.
Yeah, it's true. I'm still treating it as I'm not assuming he's going to get those five games early enough, if at all, for me to make use of it. And he hasn't. It's worth noting that's what the Cubs would like him to be right now, the third catcher. He hasn't been medically cleared to catch yet.
Okay. Yeah, this is the only thing that helps him is that he plays in the National League. And you don't have to start for it to count as a game, and you don't have to play more than an inning for it to count as a game. And his manager's Joe Maddon. And so if they want to, in the 8th inning, pinch run for Contreras or Montero and just put Schwarber down with an outfielder, and then you just put that outfielder in left field.
Wouldn't you just use Schwarber as the emergency catcher in that instance?
Well, Schwarber's already playing left field.
Yeah, I feel like teams are much less likely, and maybe it's different for them, but I feel like teams are much less likely to go with a defensive downgrade at catcher late in the game.
Well, all right. Well, look, he just needs 5 games in CBS, but you know what? Schwarber, I think, is going to be catcher eligible in some leagues. I know some websites.
Oh, yeah, he's on Yahoo. And Yahoo already is.
Right. Yeah. Okay, right. So is he the number one catcher in Yahoo for you?
No, not at all.
No, because there's playing time concerns.
He's basically Wilson Contreras so far in his career. And he was a better prospect.
And it is worth noting he's being drafted higher at Yahoo according to the early ADP.
He should.
I think that totally undersells Kyle Schwarber.
But
Yeah, he's not Wilson Contreras. Kyle Schwarber.
Well, their career numbers are nearly identical.
Wilson Contreras does have a higher career OPS. He's batted about 40 points higher.
Yeah, Kyle Schwarber could hit 30
more upside.
35 home runs.
Schwarber is an amazing power hitter, one the likes of which Contreras will never even approach. So
right, but he also might strike out 30% of the time.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. Evan Gattis. I mean, like, there's no reason why he can't put up Gattis numbers.
But Evan Gattis isn't the number one catcher.
But he was in 2014. He was number two in 2015. And you know, and like we said, he had a bad year last year, Evan Gattis. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Kyle Schwarber, if he's catcher eligible and plays outfield, is the number one catcher in fantasy. But if you're not going to draft him that way, I understand.
If he plays more regularly, then I'm afraid he will, because I worry about him sitting a lot against left-handers.
Even then, most catchers aren't playing every day.
Catchers aren't playing every day, but like, he wouldn't have that advantage that I think he would need to for sure overtake the Posies and Luke Roy's.
He's currently being drafted 71st in CBSSports.com leagues. I think that's probably 40 spots too early.
All right, tell me this. If you include Kyle Schwarber in your catcher rankings for those people playing on Yahoo, do you expect any catcher to hit more home runs than him this year?
I expect Gary Sanchez to. And I think Gattis might come close, but not knowing his playing time situation, it's hard to say that for sure.
Yeah, I'd probably put Sanchez and Schwarber in about the same place on home runs. I would say, all things playing time being equal, I'd expect Gattis to lead the position in home runs. I think I'd expect LaCroix to hit about as many as Schwarber and Sanchez too.
Whoa, LaCroix. Interesting.
So what's your prediction for Schwarber?
Let's say 24 and a half.
All right. Okay, let's do some...
So your prediction will not happen.
Let's do...
the projections are dumb, Scott.
Some catcher questions and some ADP review here. We could talk about some of these players. So I think we kind of spoke about your general catcher strategy, but if you want to just sum it up in one or two sentences, let's go around the room. Heath, Chris, Scott, your general catcher strategy going into 2017.
In a two-catcher league, I really don't want to get left out to dry at either one. I'd like to have two of the top 15 catchers.
One catcher league, though.
One catcher league. I'm really okay with just taking whatever comes to me in the draft. I don't have a specific catcher strategy.
Okay. Chris?
I'm willing to wait in either league, especially one catcher league. I don't think there's that much of a difference outside of the top handful.
Okay. Two catcher league, Chris. Well, actually, we'll come back to two catcher league. Scott, your one catcher league strategy.
If one of the three elites, Posey, LaCroix, and Sanchez, is available to me at a point that makes sense, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, I will wait until pretty much the end of the draft, and maybe even draft Wilson Ramos as a DH stash, along with my not-so-good catcher.
Even with the new news.
It's a report.
You call it that, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish it were a little more definitive. The report that we saw earlier this week that Ramos won't be able to play until July and won't be able to catch until August, which is basically a two-month difference than the timetable he gave.
I think it makes sense. I'm a pessimistic person. So when it comes to injuries especially, I think it makes sense to err on the side of things are going to be bad.
Yeah.
Well, no, but like, I don't know that this timeline for me is that much different than even, like, Ramos was hoping to start hitting in May. He's going to need to play in the minor leagues. You don't take that long off of baseball and everybody else is in midseason form and you just walk in and you're the everyday DH for the Rays.
I mean, look, they'll give him 20 at-bats or something like that. They might rush him up. Who knows? But,
which should really
concern... Why would you rush him up?
But that's also... That should really concern you.
All right.
But I'm talking about a late round. I'm talking about a throwaway pick, stashing him in a DL spot. If before he comes back, I have more important players to stash in the DL spot, whatever, I drop him. No loss.
Okay, Heath says he wants two top 15 catchers, because one thing about catcher, it gets pretty bad. You know,
I'm going to drop that down to 16, because Travis d'Arnaud is my number 16 catcher. I'm okay with him.
All right, so two top 16 catchers. And, you know, well, look, you have, are you looking at your Roto rankings or your points?
Mm-hmm.
You have Weeters 17, Murphy 18. You wouldn't be okay with one of those two?
I don't know that either one of those are starting catchers.
Yeah, it's true. Would help if Matt Wieters would sign somewhere, because I got a good stat on him. He was actually pretty good last year compared to other catchers. But yeah, catcher gets bad after about 15, 16 guys. So Heath wants two top 15 guys at catcher. Scott, how about you? Two catcher leagues.
Two catcher league, I think, with the, we've only done two of these drafts with the mixed league, player pool. And I think the most recent one, I learned that I really don't want to wait to fill both of those spots late, because it's just, it just is so ugly by the time you get beyond the top 15, 16, 17. So I think I would like to draft, you know, obviously the same situation with the elites. If it's round six or whatever and one of them's still available, I might take them. But if that doesn't work out, I might be more willing to take like a Yasmani Grandal or JT Realmuto in the teens. Mm-hmm. And then fill that second catcher spot, which you got to figure is going to be lousy for most teams anyway, just with whatever's available late in the draft.
But why not take advantage of that and have an advantage over every other team and make your second catcher someone that, you know, not necessarily great, but someone like JT Realmuto, or, you know.
Because I feel like that's too much of a concession in other areas. I don't like investing in catchers to begin with, and particularly if it's not one of the elites. Like, I don't really think, relative to other hitters, it's worth that kind of investment. I'm just doing it to keep from falling too far behind.
Okay. Chris Towers, two catcher league strategy.
The one thing I have noticed is if you wait too long on your catchers in a roto league, you are screwed in batting average. Because when you look at, there are guys who can be productive in the lower tier of catchers. Like someone like Mike Zunino is a perfect example. He might hit 20 to 25 home runs this year, but he'll probably hit 200 as well. And it's just, that's the downside with waiting too long. So I would rather get two of the mid-range catchers, potentially, you know, guys with some upside like Yasmani Grandal and Travis d'Arnaud.
Okay. Well, our mission is to find the Wilson Ramoses, the guys that we can draft late that have the breakouts. So when we look back and say, yeah, that's why this guy won, he had Wilson Ramos on his team, something like that. So, I'm gonna ask you about breakouts. I do need to ask you about a couple more formats though. Auctions, which are typically two catcher leagues, but $260 budget. You know, how much money are you spending on? Well, how much money do you think Buster Posey should go for? At a 260.
I think I have him in the low 20s.
26 is where I'm at. Scott's got him at 23. Chris has got him at 24.
All right. So how much for JT Realmuto, who is, you know, a top 10-ish kind of catcher?
11?
$7.
Okay.
What do I have him for?
8.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. And then, yeah, you can, I think same thing. A two catcher league, even if it's an auction, you still want to get two of your top 15 or 16, right?
Yeah, and I think I probably don't want to spend much more than $20 or $25 on the position.
Totally.
I think that might be high.
I think for now I'm going to say I'm inclined to spend nothing on catcher in an auction.
That's what you said, but then we had an auction and you spent like $18 on one of them.
Yeah, well, that, first of all, that was AL only, so that was a different scenario. The $1 catchers in that format are going to be significantly worse even than in a mixed league, but I think if it's in an auction scenario where you're not confined by turn order and by, you know, kind of the choreography that goes into a draft, and you can distribute your dollars however you want. I just, again, I don't like investing in catchers. I would rather have pay up for studs at other positions and just punt at catcher, take whatever I can get, take a Tyler Flowers, who I know is going to get playing time and probably hit double-digit home runs. I don't need to get into the breakout candidates, but there is a way you can still fill stats on the cheap.
You may end up with
as long as you're not looking to,
but you may
separate yourself from the competition.
You may end up like me in our AL only auction draft, where I'm projected to hit 10 points in batting average below everyone else in the league.
I don't think that was just because of your catchers though. And again, it was AL only.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So what do you do in AL only and NL only, guys?
I mean, I still went pretty cheap. I got Evan Gattis for 17 just because I thought that seemed like a value. And then, you know, it was my plan going into the auction was to spend $4 total at catcher. I was going to get James McCann and I was going to get a backup for some team who I thought might play more than the average backup. And then Evan Gass went for 17, and I had more money than I thought I would have at that point, so I got Sandy Leone for 4, which I think is fine. It's just, you know, part of there's your plan going into an auction, and then there's adjusting on the fly, and so that's why I ended up spending 21 instead of 4.
Chris, Heath, do you guys have any AL-only, NL-only advice for catchers? Even if it's a one-catcher league, you know, just how things change. Does that make Posey so valuable that you have to take him now that Lucroy's in the AL now, you know? So, like, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there is a bigger, probably a bigger drop-off, because you look at 2, 3, and 4 in the catcher rankings are all American League, and in mine, so are 6 and 7. So 6 of the 5 of the top 7 catchers are American League catchers.
Right.
So I do think it increases Posey's value.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting point. It's crazy. When I was doing the notes, I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot Jonathan Lucroy is on the Rangers now. And he was great, by the way, in Texas at Globe Life Park in Arlington. 293, 398 slugging, 573, or 398 on base, 573 slugging with 6 home runs in 25 games. Not that it's a huge park upgrade or anything like that, but
well, very good intentions. In the American League, he might be in a situation where if they want to give him a day off behind the plate, he can still play DH. He has some risk because of his age, but this could very easily be the best year of Jonathan Lucroy's career.
Okay, we're almost at our ADP breakdown, but let's do your favorite sleeper. Blank is my favorite sleeper catcher, Scott White.
Oh, this is an easy one. It is Tom Murphy for the Rockies. I'd like him a lot more if I knew for sure he was going to be the starter there and not pitch framing extraordinaire Tony Walters, who has some sleeper appeal in his own right. But Tom Murphy is the one with big upside for fantasy. In between 2 seasons in the majors, he's only gotten 88 plate appearances, but 8 home runs in them. And you know, look at his minor league career power numbers at every level, especially the final, his final 4 months at AAA. It was just ridiculous, the numbers he put up. He's a little Trevor Story-like in that he strikes out a lot, but he's going to the same park that made that not such a big issue for Trevor Story. You're predisposed to a high BABIP at Coors Field, so that helps counteract the concerns you'd have over a high strikeout rate and what it does to batting average. I think if he plays like a number one catcher, he's probably, well, probably he's putting it too strong, but he has a chance to hit like 260 with 30 homers. He has a chance to challenge Evan Gattis and Gary Sanchez as the premier power hitter at the position, and you can get him as your second catcher in most leagues. Again, part of that has to do with the uncertain playing time, but you're not going to do much better in terms of upside late at this position.
Heath, your favorite sleeper.
Can we just let Beef Wellington play more regularly?
Oh, he stinks.
He doesn't stink at all.
He has had one good stretch basically in his career. And like he stinks.
He has what, 33 home runs over the last 2 seasons, had 14 in 113 games last year, 750 OPS each of the last 2 seasons, which doesn't stink at catcher. And he's leaving Arizona, but he's going to another great park in Baltimore. Should have plenty of people on base in front of him. Let's just get him a few more plate appearances.
Well, look, I didn't think last year was a great year by any means, but 264 with 14 home runs, good enough to make Castillo the number 13 catcher in points league to number 11 in Roto. So yeah, I mean, if he does play semi-regularly, there's a good chance Castillo's
going to
be a top 12.
And their other catcher, Caleb Joseph, so he should play more than semi-regularly.
Well, there's a good chance he can be a top 12 catcher. The threshold to be a top 12 catcher is so low. But okay, but you think he has much more potential than that?
I think he could be a top 7 or 8 catcher.
All right,
yes.
Wellington Castillo. Chris, favorite sleeper?
I'm going to go with a guy that I think has some post-hype potential, and that's Mike Zunino. I mentioned him earlier. Talk about someone who could theoretically challenge for the lead at the catcher position at home runs. Mike Zunino is that guy. That might be all he gives you, but in 192 plate appearances last year in the majors, he hit 12 home runs. He hit 29 between the majors and the minors last year. He's probably going to hit 220 as his ceiling, but he did show a better eye at the plate. He was walking more often. If he just gets the strikeout rate to like 29%, which isn't asking too much. I think there's a 240, 25 homer season in Mike Zunino.
Would you guys rather have Zunino or Tom Murphy?
Murphy, for sure.
Probably Murphy. Okay. Yep. But Zunino's going to play every day.
I don't know about that.
No, he's definitely going to play every day.
He's got 1,200 plate appearances at 195. If he's hitting 180 again, 190 again.
There's a chance.
Then he's probably not going to play every day.
But that's kind of true for most catchers.
But that's what he's been for 1,200 plate appearances. He's much more likely. He's got a 262 on base percentage. Mm-hmm. Like, his playing time's far from guaranteed.
I do think it's interesting that they brought in Carlos Ruiz as his backup, like a stable fallback option. But look, we're talking about sleepers, so
right.
I don't think when you're talking sleepers, you talk the pie in the sky scenario, and I think that's I think there's a lot of truth to what Chris is saying with Zunino.
Okay, let's go to breakouts, and we'll start with Chris. Chris, your favorite breakout at catcher this year?
I always struggle with the definition of breakout. I don't know what it means, but I'll go with Travis d'Arnaud. It's really just, I know he stunk last year, but he was an 800 OPS bat in 2015. It's really just if he can stay healthy, he's got a chance to be a really solid all-around option at the position.
Yeah, look, Travis d'Arnaud had a better slugging percentage than Buster Posey in 2015. His slugging percentage was .485 and Schwarber's was .487, so he obviously has power. In 2015, he averaged 0.73 fantasy points per plate appearance, which is really good. Posey was at 0.76. Schwarber was at 0.79. So, you know, he was close to the best on a per plate appearance basis in, this is d'Arnaud in 2015, and was terrible last year. He's reworking his stance. All right, so let's do this again. Travis d'Arnaud or Tom Murphy?
d'Arnaud.
d'Arnaud, unless we get word out of camp that Tom Murphy's playing every day.
Scott?
I will go, I have d'Arnaud ranked ahead. Yeah. I mean, obviously if Murphy's situation changes, he's in my top 10 probably.
Okay. Heath, favorite breakout this year?
I'm going to go with Cameron Rupp, who had a mini breakout last year, but he was coming from a place that was so bad that nobody really noticed. But it's kind of like Wellington Castillo in that 16 home runs in 105 games. Let's just get him to 130 and see if he can hit 25 home runs this year. And he's been working on continuing to change that swing path to get more elevation, which may make it hard for him to hit 250 again. But I'd take 240 with 25 home runs.
Okay, and Scott, favorite breakout this year?
All right, so how's this for throwing you a curveball? My breakout pick is Tony Walters, the guy who might prevent my sleeper pick from coming through. I think
that's called hedging your bets.
Yeah, exactly. I almost picked Austin Hedges, for what it's worth. So even if Tom Murphy becomes the primary catcher in Colorado, Tony Walters is going to play a lot. And I would say, especially considering he's a left-handed hitter, he's probably the favorite going in, Walters is, for playing time. Pitch framing is something he excels about. The Rockies pitching staff raves about him. Pitch framing is like the in thing in baseball with catchers right now. That's why Matt Wieters doesn't have a job yet. So Walters is going to play a lot, and he's going to play a lot in Colorado. Walters isn't known as some kind of like offensive force. He wasn't some big prospect coming up through the minors, but anytime a player, especially at a scarce position, is getting regular at-bats in Colorado, special things can happen.
We don't have to look that far.
Nick Hundley. Yep.
Hit .282 with 20 home runs and 706 plate appearances with the Rockies.
And he was a top eight catcher in Roto, Nick Hundley, in 2015.
And Nick Hundley is probably about as fringy as you can get for a starting catcher.
Yeah.
And Tony Walters in the second half last year didn't, 84 bats, small sample, but he hit .321 with an .862 OPS. So there may have already been some indications of him learning to succeed in that environment. I think almost said his name earlier when I was talking about catchers you could get for very cheap in a two-catcher league who wouldn't tank your batting average. Like, worst-case scenario, I think Walters hits .250 like he did last year, and there's a good chance he hits more like .280.
I'm just going to get Tony Walters and Tom Murphy in our NL-only mock draft tonight.
But in an NL-only league? That it's probably not a bad idea.
What if you did that in a standard mixed league? What if you made those two Rockies catchers your two catchers, and you just hoped that one of them got enough playing time that became really, really good, and then either the other one, whatever, you can try to replace or was adequate, you know?
I think you'd have to try and replace him in a mixed league just because you'd be sacrificing too many at-bats.
Yeah.
Committing both catcher spots to just one team.
And they're probably going to hit seventh or eighth in that lineup, too.
So, Scott, which Rockies catcher would you draft first?
I'd draft Murphy first because I think the upside is so much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And let's do a bust real quick. Scott, Heath, Chris. Scott, bust.
My bust, as I stall for a minute to figure out who my bust is, because everybody's kind of a busted catcher, I'm going to go with Brian McCann as my bust because of the playing time situation with Evan Gattis there. They're not just going to make Evan Gattis a bench player. Obviously, McCann's skills have been declining as a receiver. Known as a great pitch framer, so I guess that helps his cause. Left-handed hitter. But I could see how he just becomes the better half of a strict platoon there.
Yes.
And just doesn't get enough at-bats to really be even a top 12 catcher.
Or he's just awful because he's pretty much has been outside of Yankee Stadium for like 2 years now.
Okay.
Well,
there's that.
The last couple years for McCann, he hit, I think, 8 home runs on the road and 9 home runs on the road. And at least he's going to a good park.
And he didn't like the transition from Atlanta to New York. I understand his splits were better at Yankee Stadium, but he was the same player overall, you know, like there wasn't really a change in overall production.
Yeah. He hit 10 home runs on the road in 2015 and 9 home runs on the road in 2016. So, all right. McCann is Scott's pick to be a bust, but when you see where he's going in current ADP, you might change your mind. I don't think it's the same as what we've been seeing in our drafts, but it's kind of crazy. All right, Heath, who's your bust?
I would have said McCann because I think I'm by far the lowest on him.
Probably.
But,
sorry, Heath.
That's okay. I'll go with JT Realmuto.
Yes.
He's nowhere close to a 300 hitter. 357 BABIP last year. And it's really nice that he stole 12 bases as a catcher, and he stole 8 the year before. I'm not going to rely on a catcher to steal bases, especially one that's stealing 8 to 12. That could disappear in a hurry. So if he's a 270 hitter with 50 runs and 50 RBI, yeah.
He is fast. He has led the catchers in steals 2 straight seasons. If you gave him 2 steals last year instead of 12, because most catchers, you know, 2 steals would be great. If you gave Realmuto 2 steals, he would have been the number 9 catcher in points leagues, down from number 6. But Heath is also saying the batting average, .303, was, you know, is unlikely to repeat itself.
I think the batting average is much more likely to regress than the stolen bases. You know, the Marlins are, if he's healthy, he's going to play every day. That's one of those situations where they just want him to play every day.
Yeah, that's kind of why I said yes when Heath picked JT Realmuto as his bust, because I feel like that is a more intrinsic to Heath bust pick.
Yeah.
Like specific to him. I actually feel like Realmuto is a very safe option. I'm not saying his batting average won't decline. I'm not saying his steals won't decline, but he's going to play so much and get so many. He's going to have a lot of at bats and not have bad numbers.
But he got 500
enough to make him a startable catcher.
He had 545 last year. We can't expect more than that.
No, I'm not saying he'll have more.
He was number 6 catcher last year.
He's going to be worse this year than he was last year.
Yeah. So he has less than 11 home runs, less than 60 runs, and less than 48 RBI?
He's probably still a top 10 catcher. I mean, he was number 6 in points, number 5 in roto. I mean, that's the thing about catcher. Catchers are terrible. Like JT Realmuto.
You get a lot of credit at catcher just for showing.
Yes, just for playing. Exactly. It's what I was saying about the at-bats. There's no way that you had JT Realmuto on your team and you were like, wow, this guy is so good. He's carrying my team. But you had a top 6 catcher. So it's just, you know, that's why I don't like investing. You don't want to invest a lot in a guy like JT Realmuto who doesn't have much upside.
Right. He was a top 6 catcher with a 303 batting average. It was probably 30 or 40 points too high.
Yadier Molina has been a fantasy mainstay for years. And apart from a 3-year stretch where he had double-digit home runs, all he's really done is show up.
That's the bust. Like, if you're talking about someone who's definitely going to decline, Yadier Molina, would you say, Adam, he was the number four catcher last year?
In points, seventh in Roto. The year before, Molina was ninth in points, but 17th in Roto. But he had 307.
There's a pretty good chance Yadier Molina is just present and doesn't really do anything beyond that. And you can be the number seven catcher in points by just showing up, but like, the person who started Yadier Molina every day in 2015 was probably really bad.
Right, right. I mean, that's the thing. Well, yeah, I don't know if that's true either, but you didn't feel like you were winning the league because of Yadier Molina.
Oh no, he wasn't the reason you were winning at all. Just because he happened to finish fourth, it was more about avoiding the floor.
He was good last year, relative. Like he was a decent catcher in addition to being there every day. In 2015, he was bad.
Yeah, and he was bad in Roto in 2015. He was 17.
And I think the Roto ranking is a lot more relevant. Like, you can talk about the season end, but I'd rather stream at catcher and hope that I can hit on someone than draft Yadier Molina as my starter.
All right, let's do ADP review now and see what we think. We have not talked at all about Gary Sanchez, very little, and I think he's so interesting. Is Gary Sanchez the first catcher you would draft if you were starting up a dynasty league?
Oh, yeah, you have to be.
Yeah.
And what round would you be looking at him, like round three or four?
Oh, earlier than that, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Are
you going to take Nelson Cruz or Gary Sanchez, you know?
In a dynasty league? Yeah. Gary Sanchez every time.
Yeah.
Cruz goes way down below that.
Unless you, like, don't trust your league mates and you think it might be one of those dynasty leagues that dies in 2 years anyway.
Are you going to take JD Martinez or Gary Sanchez?
Sanchez in a dynasty league.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So in a seasonal league, here's your 12-team league ADP review. Just in terms of rounds, this would be a 12-team league. Buster Posey. This is interesting to me. Buster Posey round four. Gary Sanchez round four. Jonathan Lucroy round six. And I would rather have Lucroy than Sanchez. How do you guys rank it?
Yeah, we all have Lucroy ahead of Sanchez.
Yeah.
I have Sanchez ahead in Roto because of, I think there's going to be a big home run advantage, but overall, I do think Lucroy is a better player, and my head-to-head ranking reflects that.
What's going to be a bigger advantage, though? Lucroy's batting average or Sanchez's home runs? Because, you know, batting average, as you've talked about, Scott, is a hard category to fill or to get a standout in. Mm-hmm. And I am very worried about Gary Sanchez's batting average. Like, I could see him hitting 240. Like, his last 22 games, Gary Sanchez batted 244. After 10 games of batting 205, which was a real bad stretch. Then he bounced back. He batted 244 with 9 home runs, which is great, in his last 22 games.
I think 260 is probably a more realistic floor for Sanchez.
I'm worried about him. I've been hinting at this. What concerns me about Sanchez, when you compare him to Lucroy, for example, like, Sanchez is the best hitter on his team. I think they're probably going to bat him third. And I just worry about the pressure that's being put on Gary Sanchez right now. I don't love the circumstances for him. I think the two guys that are going to be hitting in front of him, Ellsbury and Gardner, were terrible last year. And it just seems like a lot to put on Gary Sanchez. And you see that sometimes with high expectations in that kind of media market. I know it's not something that we're going to look at the stat sheet and be able to quantify or whatever. It's more of a gut feeling. That is something that concerns me with Sanchez.
We talked a lot yesterday about rookies that were worse as sophomores. He is going to be one of those, but he still plays catcher, and I still think he'll be good enough that, like, I think
there's a long way he can go before he's not the number three catcher. Yeah, in terms of regression.
Right. No, I definitely see that. I definitely see that. Okay, so ADP again is Posey round four, Sanchez round four, Lucroy round six. Of those three, I'm going to guess that we think Lucroy is the best value there.
Yep,
absolutely.
All right, and Schwarber in round six as well, right after Lucroy. If Schwarber's catcher eligible, is that where you would slot him in as the number four catcher?
Yeah.
As the number four, I don't think I'd draft him in the same round as Lucroy. I still think, even assuming catcher eligibility, the earliest I'd go is round seven. And since I'm not assuming that in most of the leagues we do, I like him in round nine.
What? Because that's when Wilson Contreras is going. So, like, Schwarber, you're worried about him sitting against lefties, right?
Yeah. Again, round nine was it assume if I'm not assuming catcher eligibility.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. That feels like him being drafted in the same round as Wilson Contreras when Wilson Contreras is catcher eligible. That maybe Wilson Contreras just needs to be drafted higher then.
I think that's right. again, if we're operating under CBS Sports rules where Schwarber isn't catcher eligible yet, I actually, and the way I can tell this is they're both outfield eligible. So where are they in my outfield rankings? They're right next to each other.
Oh, okay. That's interesting to me because that's putting a lot of stock into the playing time and thinking that Schwarber's going to sit a lot, right? Is that's where it comes
well,
from?
Well, and the catcher eligibility that
Contreras so already has. Then they're not really right next to each other. If they were both only outfield eligible, Schwarber would be well ahead of Wilson
yes.
Contreras, right?
Yes.
Okay. Back to ADP. So it's Posey and Sanchez round 4, Lucroy and Schwarber round 6, Wilson Contreras round 9, Evan Gattis and JT Realmuto round 11. So what do you think about that? Contreras round 9 as the number 5 catcher off the board, but number 4 if you don't include Schwarber. And then Gattis and Realmuto in round 11.
That's too early for Realmuto.
Yeah, I mean, relative to seeing some of the other names on here that are going after him, I think I have to agree with that.
Who do you guys like better, Gattis or Wilson Contreras?
Contreras.
I like Gattis more. I feel like Contreras, I feel like his power potential is limited enough that he's going to really stand out. He needs a high batting average.
I mean, he was on a 20-homer pace last year.
But so much of it was front-loaded.
And with a really elevated home run to fly ball ratio.
Yeah. And he could be the next Jonathan Lucroy. I'm not ruling out that possibility. I just think it's way too early to...
He's someone that I expect to be more of a really good all-around player than, like, a power threat.
Who do we think gets more plate appearances, Contreras or Gattis?
Contreras.
Push.
I'll say Contreras.
I have Gattis actually one spot ahead in Roto, but in the points league, I have Contreras higher.
But I think even as a, you know, less than everyday player, which Gattis has been for most of his career, I think you can pencil him in for 25 home runs.
All right. Okay, so we've got 7 catchers off the board. I'm just not going to count Schwarber for now. Okay, so we have 6 catchers off the board. Posey, Sanchez, Lucroy, Wilson Contreras round 9, Gattis round 11, Realmuto round 11. We have Salvador Perez in round 12. Perez is 4th in Heath's points league's ranking. Heath is the high guy on Perez, looking out at Roto, 7th in Heath's. Everybody's got him. Well, no, Chris is the high guy on Perez, 5th in Roto, and Scott and Heath have him 7th. So Perez is the next guy off the board. He's the 7th catcher, and he's in round 12. Yasmani Grandal. We talked about him recently, you know, on a per game, per plate appearance basis. If this guy could just stay healthy, Grandal could definitely be a top 5 catcher. And he was number 8. He's the number 8 catcher off the board in round 13, followed by Brian McCann and Wellington Castillo. So, Salvador Perez, Yasmani Grandal, Brian McCann, Wellington Castillo. They go as the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th catchers in rounds 12 through 16. Let's throw Russell Martin in there too, because he's next. He's the 11th off the board in also round 16. What do you think about that group? Perez, Grandal, McCann, Wellington Castillo, Russell Martin.
I definitely don't want McCann out of that group.
It's a great combination of the things we've talked about at the catcher position. Salvador Perez, good power threat, but I think the biggest thing that he gives you is he's definitely going to be there every single day.
Yeah, and you got to trade him in like May because he's terrible.
He tends to wear down, which that's the
3 years
double-edged sword with him. And then Grandal, I think, is someone that if he could just be there every day and give you the production that he's given on a per-game basis over the last couple of seasons, especially before the shoulder injury in 2015, I think he's someone who could very easily move into that top 3 or 4.
I just want to, because I'm not as high on Grandal as Chris is, and I do think playing time is and at-bats are his biggest concern, but we are talking about a guy who hit 228 last year, who was hit a combined, last 3 years has hit a combined 229. Like, he's kind of a souped-up version of Mike Zunino in that, yeah, you're going to get good power from him, but you're sacrificing a lot in batting average.
Scott,
so I don't see him as...
Can I ask you about the batting average, though?
Because sure.
It's weird because his walk to strike out ratio is like one walk to two strikeouts. I find it weird that Grandal's hitting 230 every year. And then in 2015, he was batting 295 with a 912 OPS on August 4th. And then I think this coincided with his shoulder injury. He batted.
And didn't he have a concussion as well?
Well, I don't know, but he batted 072 in his last 32 games to finish at 234 for the season. And he had 20 walks with 31 strikeouts while batting less than 100, under 100. So I don't know. I just feel like if Grandal can stay healthy, we haven't seen the best. Like, he might be the real breakout catcher. I've gotten very excited about Yasmani Grandal, looking at his ADP, being able to take him in round 13 or something like that.
He's going to be a low BABIP guy. I think that's pretty clear. But if he can be a 275 BABIP guy, which is his career mark instead of the 250 he was last year, all of a sudden he's hitting 240, 245, and there's not that much of a difference between him and Evan Gattis.
Scott, like, maybe it's a points roto thing, because if you're worried about the playing time, then he'll be better in roto than points. I don't know.
If batting average, like the batting average versus OBP thing, OBP high relative to batting average would favor his points value too. It's a complicated case. I mean, he's kind of like the Carlos Santana of catchers in terms of percentages, but then there's the playing time issue that hurts him in points leagues on top of that. So that's why I can't rank him as high, even if, I'll acknowledge there's some upside there that hasn't been met.
Okay.
Well, and then there's also the fact, like, he hits 27 home runs last year. He's one of the guys that jumped from the teens to the mid-20s. Does he just go back to what he was before? Because he didn't really have that many. Like, he got 450 plate appearances, about what he'd been on the 2 years before that. Was that power surge even real?
I look at it, and that the stark line that's drawn in 2015 between his pre- and post-injury, that just, it's hard for me to ignore that, and I'm pretty sure he was on that kind of pace before the injury.
But you don't think
he's
a 25% home run to fly ball rate guy?
No, but he can be an 18 to 19% guy.
Well, he was 16 in 2015 mm-hmm. when he hit, 17 home runs?
But what was he before the injury? I mean, that's the thing. Like, he had an OPS over 900 before the injury in August. So that's, I don't know.
I think 18, 19 home run to fly ball rates, Chris is right about that. I just think that makes him an 18 to 19 home run guy.
Okay, so that's Grandal. Let me make a case for Russell Martin here, guys. Martin got off to just a terrible start last season. He had a 172 batting average, 9 walks, 45 strikeouts, and no home runs in his first 39 games. Russell Martin was one of the worst regular players in baseball. Last 98 games, he hit 252 with 20 home runs and looked a lot like he did in 2015 when he hit 240 with 23 home runs over the season. And Martin was the number 4 catcher in 2015. He was the number 7 catcher in points, number 8 in roto in 2016. So that's Russell Martin being drafted as the 11th catcher off the board, round 16. Do you think that's good value?
I do.
I think it's great value.
Particularly in roto, but even in points too, because he's been a low strikeout guy among catchers. Last year he had 148, but a lot of that was the weirdness that happened at the beginning of the season. I have no idea what went wrong for him then. He was striking out like every other at bat and looked like he'd just completely lost it those first 2 months of the season and then regained it all of a sudden.
Also, it's Russell Martin's birthday today.
Oh, it is?
Happy birthday, Russell.
Happy birthday.
So Russell he's now Martin. 34 years old.
Mm-hmm. He's old.
Is really old for a catcher.
Yeah, you should definitely not draft Russell Martin before like the 14th round.
We've got Russell Martin ranked too high.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, as consistently as he's provided 20 home runs, just if you're looking to get anything from catcher, I can forgive a lot of faults at catcher because it's not like you're sacrificing anything.
The narrative of the strikeout problem was just the first month. He did strike out 46% of the time.
It was the first 2 months. It was the first, I think May 20th was the turning point.
June, he struck out 25%, July 25%, August 25%, September 28%. That's a lot higher than where Russell Martin was in mm-hmm. his career.
Okay.
If he's a 25 to 26% strikeout rate, I think is what you expect now, I'm going to probably lower Russell Martin.
All right.
I think in the 15th round, he's an absolute
steal. Yes, we have him like ranked as a 6th or 7th ranked catcher.
He was 8th last year, 7th in points, 8th in roto, so, keep that in mind. That was with, 39 absolutely horrible games, batting 172. All right, we're running a little long here, so let's finish off. I'm going to go like five guys at a time, and you just tell me who maybe your one or two favorites are. These are all getting to late round picks. Yadier Molina, Matt Wieters, Wilson Ramos, Tom Murphy, Stephen Vogt.
Assuming Wieters finds a team, Wieters is my favorite there. If not, probably Murphy, but that's a pretty disgusting group of players.
yeah,
I like them all better than Ramos, quite a lot more.
All right. Okay, so next group would be Jorge Alfaro, a Phillies prospect, Sandy Leon, Yan Gomes, James McCann, Zach Collins, a White Sox prospect, and Cameron Rupp.
Well, Cameron Rupp, I mean, one of these names is not like the others, right? Like, that's Heath's sleeper pick, and I guess if this is his going rate, that's probably true. He was among the top hitters in average exit velocity last year, and we saw a big power jump go, a big home run jump go with it. Just needs more consistent playing time. But, you know, in a scenario where he's not available among these, I really don't think, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I really don't think this late at this position, it really hurts you to buy into Sandy Leon, because you know the Red Sox are. He's going to be their starting catcher. I don't really understand why he was so much more productive than he ever was in the minors or in his previous reserve roles in the majors last year. But,
well, part of it was because he had almost a 400 BABIP.
Yeah, yeah, that had a lot to do with it, but like,
he also had a 25% line drive rate and a 31% hard hit rate. So the 390 BABIP is not real, but there was something there.
And like, when your alternatives are Yan Gomes and James McCann, who you're expecting to hit 200, you know, like, why not?
You'd be pretty happy if Yan Gomes hits 200 after the season he had.
Yeah. One thing though about Leon is that like his batting average was so high during a pretty long stretch. I'm always skeptical of guys who do it over one stretch, like Wellington Castillo a few years ago. And Leon, when Leon got bad, his last 28 games, he had a 546 OPS. He batted 222 with no home runs and three doubles in 28 games, three extra base hits in 28 games. But yeah, I mean, look,
I'd rather just wait at that point.
Oh, look at the value of these final guys. We'll end the show with this.
Okay.
After Rupp, it's Francisco Cervelli, Darnot, who's the number 25 catcher according to Fantasy Pros ADP right now. Blake Swihart's probably going to start the year in the minors. Derek Norris, Mike Zunino, and then Devin Mesoraco, we haven't talked about yet. Darnot is, I guess, really stands out. Like,
yeah,
right there.
He's a fantastic value right now.
That's the other one of these names. It's not like the others.
But would you rather take a shot on Devin Mesoraco than Sandy Leon?
Depending on the circumstances, yeah. I mean, I think it's clear Mesoraco has more upside. If it's a league specific format, I can
AL only.
Well, I guess if it's a league specific format, you want to have that choice because they're in different leagues. But I don't like the idea of drafting Devin Mesoraco in an NL only league, because the investment you'd have to make in a format that deep is so much that if he takes a zero for the year, which is distinctly possible, you'll really be kicking yourself.
Yeah. Almost literally done nothing the last two seasons.
Yeah. A surgery, I think, on both hips.
And a shoulder.
So,
yep.
Yes. Somehow he's still able to strap up and squat behind the plate. I don't know how, but supposedly he's healthy going into camp, and maybe this is the year he gets back to being I mean, he was Gary Sanchez
right
a couple of years ago. You know, he was the
25 homers, 273 average.
The prospect coming up who suddenly put a crazy nap power numbers relative to the position, and then encountered all those injuries. So the upside is for a dollar as your second catcher in a mixed league, I'm totally about that gamble. Sure.
All right, one last thing about Mesoraco. Brian Price said he doesn't really anticipate Mesoraco catching more than half the games for maybe at least a month. So
the Yasmani Grandal treat.
Yeah, playing time is going to be an issue, and it could be less than half the games. They're going to take it slowly with him. Okay, that's our catcher preview. We'll have first base tomorrow. I want to thank Heath, Chris, and Scott, and all of you for listening. I'm Adam Azer. Talk to you tomorrow with First Base.